sky. Please tell us why
you had to hide away for so long.
Where did we go wrong? Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Hey there, Mr. Blue, it's a place to be with you. Look around, see what you do.
This is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
Why are you keeping me at a distance? All that I'm asking for is forgiveness. Are you even listening? Am I talking to myself again? I keep on staring up at the ceiling, waiting for you to give me some kind of reason. Even listening, am I talking to myself again? And I know you don't owe me your love, and I know that you don't owe me nothing at all. Ain't no way I'm giving up on you. Don't leave me here. If you love me, say so.
Schultz, Shed a Light, and David Guetta right here on Whims FM. Hello and good evening, Blonde and Tracy here. This is Ireland's only pop-up radio station, Walk In My Shoes Radio, and we've got a great show lined up for you this evening. For the next couple of hours, we're going to be here until 7 o'clock. Lots of chat, interesting interviews, and of course, plenty, plenty of music. So, it's that time of the evening where lots of you are heading home from school, college, work, and don't worry, we are going to be keeping you entertained. We're going to help you shake off the day and generally keep you company. So, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Walk In My Shoes. Also use the hashtag WhimsFM. We want to be trending, so make sure you use that. Get in touch on Instagram and on Twitter with that hashtag WhimsFM. So coming up this hour, we meet the head of a festival that's challenging mental health stigma through the creative arts. That's David Keegan, CEO of First Fortnight, coming up shortly. I'm sure plenty of you have heard about that festival. It's incredible. Then later on, we are going to explore the impact of design on mental health, particularly in housing. An occupational therapist and architect who co-authored a unique report drop in to share their findings on how we can better support, sidestep or bypass common difficulties that can prove barriers to independent living for those of us with mental health challenges, all through the power of good design. That's Áine O'Reilly, and I hope I say this lady's name right, Iseld Dillon. We're going to be chatting to her in a little while, so we'll find out exactly how she says then. And then after 6 p.m, I'm very excited about this, we are going to be chatting to jewellery designer and all-round shot of sparkly goodness, Choopy. She's going to be telling us about what inspires her jewellery and just why she's so positive all the time. Choopy Sweetman is her name, so she's sweet by name and sweet by nature as well. But in the meantime, let's keep on going with the tunes. Here's Perfect Strangers' Jonas Blue featuring JP Cooper right here on Whims FM.
We can't explain. Maybe we're helping each other escape.
Maybe we'll walk away.
Strangers, Jonas Blue featuring JP Cooper right here on Whims FM with myself, Blana Tracy. I'm here until 7 o'clock this evening and I'm joined by lots and lots of lovely people. So, at the start of the new year, it can be really, really positive for some people. Clean slate, new start resolutions to go to the gym and all that sort of stuff. But also, it can be really daunting for other people. You've got a whole year ahead of you. You might have post-Christmas blues. It's a tough month. January can be really, really difficult. Step in, first fortnight, an arts festival that provides a programme of events designed to get people talking about mental health and reducing the stigma around some of the conditions. So we have CEO of the festival, David Keegan, here to tell us more. Welcome along. Thank you so much, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Not at all. So first off, tell us exactly what is First Fortnight.
So First Fortnight is essentially a charity, and the point of the charity is an anti-stigma discrimination campaign that's run. We run a creative arts festival every January, the purpose of which is to challenge stigma and mental health through creative and cultural action. Mm-hmm. Typically, we start the festival every year in the first fortnight.
Oh, Mike, she goes, come a little bit closer to the mic. Good, mind yourself. There you go.
Yep. Lovely. So we start every new year in the first fortnight of every year, hence the name. Traditionally, because my co-founder JP Swain is a psychotherapist and a social worker, and he would know that the beginning of every new year's caseload shoots up.
Okay.
Tends to be a challenging time for a lot of people getting through Christmas and New Year's, a lot of pressure.
So he would find a lot of people would be getting in touch with him, maybe to do with their own mental health issues, and it's a time where people actually do seek out help.
Yeah, it's the first quarter traditionally of every new year, so I suppose our model was to do it then and hopefully have an influence on people and their mental health and address a problem before it becomes a serious issue.
Okay, so it's a festival, but it's an arts festival. So what kind of things happen throughout this the festival? And it happens all over the country, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we started with one event in 2010 in Andrews Lane, and our first partner was Mental Health Ireland. It was a gig, and we just started a conversation about mental health, essentially. That's the purpose of the festival. The festival itself is just a medium to communicate or start a mental health conversation. It creates that safe space. And then we contextualize, I suppose, those mental health themes with post-show discussions and debate.
Okay.
So, with this year, I mean, it grew from that one event in Dublin in 2010 into this year, at last count, it'll be about 78 events plus.
78 all over the country?
15 counties at last.
Wow.
Last
that's
count,
incredible.
Yeah.
So are we talking like musical gigs? What kind of stuff are we talking? What kind of events are they?
Theatre.
Okay.
Comedy, film, dance.
Awesome. Music to my ears. I love it.
Yeah, theatre. Yeah, everything. I mean, and visual arts. So, I mean, and then debate, essentially. So, I mean, we don't shy away from any art form. We kind of actively encourage it every new year to keep the programme fresh, keep people interested.
Yeah, and I love that kind of, as well, being creative and getting creative is a really kind of therapeutic way to kind of battle your own mental illnesses. So that's obviously important, to be creative.
Any kind of creative activity releases dopamine in your brain, makes you feel good at a very basic level.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where we come from. And as far as the festival model and using the creative arts, like any initiative of great social importance, it's generally been artists at the front of those campaigns. It was AIDS, hunger, equality. And we just took that model and applied it to an Irish context.
Mm.
Created and produced an arts festival to address this issue, and it's quite prevalent in Irish society. I mean, at the time there wasn't mental health wasn't a conversation people were having in 2009, and amongst my demographic and my co-founder's demographic, we were amongst the worst suicide rates for men our age at the time. Now we're a bit older, but the suicide rates still haven't really changed. We're still amongst the worst in Europe.
Right, so it still is a huge problem. But, you know, I mean, this has expanded so much in the last few years, and it shows that there is a huge interest there. And, you know, so it's the first 2 weeks in January, isn't it?
Well, it always starts in the first 2 weeks of January. I don't know if we've ever actually only been 14 days. We've been between 10, and I think this year we're nearly the full month in January.
Really?
Yeah, because people send in amazing proposals, and we have our biggest problem is saying no to anything.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah,
it's always on the table.
So if there's anyone listening right now and they'd love to get involved, and maybe they have some kind of creative outlet that they think would be really beneficial for First Fortnight, how can people get involved?
We would be very close to wrapping up the festival programme at this year, so we'll always take submissions from people. Ultimately, it has to. We have to call time at some point. It needs to go design. We need to start working on actually promoting the campaign, the festival programme, and the issues. So if people want to get involved, they can volunteer through the festival website. It's simply just fill out a form, tell us what your skill set is and how you'd like to support us, how you'd like to help.
Yeah, awesome. And why did you want to get in touch, or not in touch, involved with this, with First Fortnight in the first place?
Well, myself and my co-founder JP started it in 2009. And it started like any great idea over a beer, really.
Yeah.
And we started developing this idea around this, like using the creative arts to start this conversation. As I said, arts champion these types of issues, and we just contextualize it for Ireland and did one event. That one event turned into a full-blown festival that, as I said, it'll be a minimum of 78 events in 15 counties. So, and I mean, we've only grown so fast, because of all the support we've had. And I mean, we wouldn't be able to do what we do only for the fact that we've got so much voluntary support. We started as, I mean, we were volunteers up until like the majority of the contributors to what we do are it's voluntary run.
Mm-hmm.
And then we opened up as we're a service provider now. We opened up a Centre for Creative Therapies in 2012, and now we provide free art therapy to the city's most vulnerable, the people those at risk of and experiencing homelessness.
Brilliant. I can't wait to find out a little bit more. You're going to stay with us. We're going to play a tune now. What have we got? We've got a little bit of Ed Sheeran, Castle on the Hill. David, you stay with us, right?
Yep.
Thank you.
When I was 6 years old, I broke my leg. And I was running from my brother and his friends. See the sweet perfume of the mountain grass all rolled down. I was younger then. Take me back to when I found my heart, broke it here, made friends and lost them through the years. And I've not seen the boring fields in so long. I know I've grown, but I can't wait. Go home. I'm on my way, driving at 90 down those country lanes, singing to Tiny Dancer, and I miss the way you make me feel. It's real when we watch the sunset. Old and smoking and rolled cigarettes, running from the law through the backfields and getting drunk with my friends. Had my first kiss on a Friday night. I don't reckon that I did it right, but I was younger then. Take me back to when we found weekend jobs and when we got paid. We'd buy cheap spirits and drink them straight. Me and my friends have not thrown up in so long. Oh, how we've grown. But I can't wait to go home. Sell clothes. One works down by the coast. One had two kids.
fights but lives alone. One's brother overdosed. One's already on his second wife. One's just barely getting by. But these people race me and I can't wait to go home. And I'm on my way. I still remember these old country lanes. When
Ed Sheeran, Castle on the Hill, right here on Whims FM. I'm Blonna Tracy and I'm joined by David Keegan, CEO of First Fortnight Festival. You're welcome back, everybody. So, David, you were talking to me a little bit before we were listening to Ed Sheeran there, a little bit about art therapy and what you guys get up to. So fill me in.
So, yeah, we employ two art psychotherapists, one visual art and one we diversified into a new kind of form of art therapy and music therapy. And we essentially take at the moment direct referrals from the HSC Homelessness Service. That service was so popular that now we take referrals from most homelessness services across Dublin, actually. We're looking to expand that service within the next 2 years, hopefully within the next year down to Cork, and provide care down there too. It's becoming a very popular form of therapy and one that isn't publicly provided. Generally, you can only access it through private means.
That's brilliant. And why did you guys decide to do that in the first place?
We took a punt. And there was a Genio fund, and they were offering money for social initiatives that were innovative. We based our model on public services that are already provided in the UK and Canada and the US.
Yeah.
Made an application, and it was successful. And then we had to do it.
Yeah.
We had to figure out how to do it.
You probably didn't realise, like, it actually was successful. I didn't think it was going to happen.
Exactly. Well, that was like every element of everything that we've done since we started doing this. It was only with support and a lot of very skillful, experienced, influential people, and we've just kind of been really good at nurturing those relationships.
Yeah.
And that's really, if we're successful, that's the reason why.
Awesome. So would you look to other countries and other initiatives around the world and kind of take inspiration from them?
No, we didn't. They exist. We didn't. We just had the idea, and we've developed it over time. And we've kind of, it's been trial and error. I mean, this will be our seventh festival.
Yeah.
In 2016, in October, we were part of a collaborative process that delivered Europe's first mental health festival in Athens. And as a result of that, we made a bid to host the next European Mental Health Arts Festival. And we're successful, and we'll be doing that in January 2019.
Brilliant. Mm. Did you realize you were going to be successful at that as well?
No, we never do. No. We just take a punt.
That's brilliant. Are you nervous about that? Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah. We always are. Every festival, we always have a moment where we go, did we just do that? And we always manage to pull it off, because if it comes from the right place.
Yeah.
And people see the passion that we have for what we do, and they take that to heart and they support it. And that's how we are. That's why we're where we are today, really.
Yeah, and how many of you are involved with First Fortnight?
It's an army. I'm one of the few reluctant faces that end up on radio or doing TV interviews and stuff like that. And when I say reluctant, I'm not the most comfortable in front of a microphone.
Well, you're doing very well this evening.
Thank you very much. You're very kind. We started off, we were grassroots voluntarily run. It got to a point where we'd built to a point where we kind of employed three people. I took a leap of faith because there was no wage for me at the time. I left a full-time paid job to ultimately then manage First Fortnight, because at the time, myself and my co-director were essentially working two full-time jobs. It's what it became. I took a leap of faith and left my job, and we managed to source some core funding from the HSE. So now we've two part-time employees, two full-time, and then two contracts. And then, I mean, we've got a voluntary board of 13, 14 people. And then we've got a resource team who fundraise all year round. And then 90 volunteers signed up to help us produce the festival.
Wow, 90 people. That's incredible.
140 filled out the application online, but we actually didn't have enough shifts to give them. So
insane. That's brilliant, isn't it? It's so fantastic how everybody wants to get involved because it is a real feel-good festival.
Yeah, it's the only reason we can do what we do. It wouldn't be possible otherwise, or it would affect my mental health and I'd have to seriously consider my role.
And what do you guys get up to then for the rest of the year? Your fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, we're involved in, as I said, we're going to be hosting Europe's next mental health festival. So actually we've programmed elements of that festival in January 19, but we're involved in two other European sports and mental health projects that are ongoing. One will be finished in June next year, and one actually only starts. We have our first partner meeting in Athens in November. So does that, and we fundraise to produce the festival. So although we're core funded to do some, our staff are core funded, we actually fundraise year round to actually produce the festival. So it's significant. It's a significant amount to do that. And I mean, we couldn't do it without people like Pat, one of our mental health partners. We've got Mental Health Reform, Sea Change, Mental Health Ireland, and then we're grant-aided by the HSE, the Arts Council, Dublin City Council. We've got great media partnerships with News Talk, Irish Times and RTE. So without that collaborative kind of effort, again, we wouldn't be able to do what we do.
Awesome. And you're going to be launching the schedule next month, is that right?
We're launching in November 30th in the beautiful St. Patrick's Cathedral. This is actually going to be, I don't know if it's actually been announced yet, so maybe this is a coup. there's going to be the Swift Festival. We're launching on what would have been Jonathan Swift's 350th birthday.
Wow.
So we launched the festival program as part of that event. It's going to be a music gig in St. Pat's. Hosted by the Swift Festival people, emceed by Stephen James Smith, and the lineup will be announced very soon, I believe,
very exciting.
And tickets will be on sale.
Very, very cool. Well, listen, David, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more information?
On the website, firstfortnight.ie, everything's there.
Awesome. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's have some more tunes. We've got GRL Ugly Heart right here on WIMS FM.
Through it. With the right support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01 249 3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
For World Mental Health Week, this is Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services, Dublin 8.
We were staying in Paris to get away from your parents, and I thought, wow, if I could take this in a shot right now, I don't think that we could work this out. Out on a terrace, I don't know if it's fair, but I thought, how could I let you fall by yourself? Well, I'm wasted for someone else. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything, they'll say that I was clever. If we cigarette, posting pictures of yourself on the internet, out on the terrace. We breathe in the air of this small town, on our own, cutting glass with the thrill of it, getting drunk on the past we were living in. If we go down, then we go down together. They'll say you could do anything, they'll say that I was clever. If we
In My Shoes Radio, encouraging you to get the conversation started this Mental Health Week. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Walk In My Shoes, and don't forget to use the hashtag WIMSFM. That's WIMSFM. Now let's talk design for mental health. I found this really interesting because I've actually never thought about it before. So living independently while with a persistent mental health issue such as schizophrenia, for example, that can prove really challenging, but there are ways that housing design could help to remove some of the barriers. And a pioneering report from the HSE and the housing agency Design for Mental Health looks at some of the issues, and two of the authors, occupational therapist Áine O'Reilly and architect Isolde Dillon, I think I said it right, join us now. Hello ladies, and welcome along.
Hello.
Did I say your name right?
You did.
Isolde. Okay.
Okay, thank you, thank you. People butcher my name all the time, Blonnet. It's a difficult one. Okay, so can you give us a little bit of background on the Design for Mental Health report?
Okay, so living comfortably in your own home has the potential to transform the experience of having a mental health difficulty, and it's the potential to promote recovery, and it's in line with government policy and all those sort of things. But when we went to look in work for guidance on how to maybe design homes or what to build for people with who are strongly affected by mental health conditions, there was nothing available. We really searched high and low in the international literature and all that. Wow. Couldn't find anything.
That's really interesting, but there just wasn't anything there.
There wasn't anything there at all. There was a bit about like how to design a psychiatric ward in a hospital, and there was little tiny bits and pieces about how to design maybe a hostel and things like that, but nothing about
but a
housing.
Living space.
A living, not an independent living, like ordinary house. There wasn't anything about that. Like in the same way, like there was loads of stuff about designing ramps and wheelchairs, or lots of stuff about designing for dementia or designing for autism and Asperger's and all that sort of stuff, but nothing at all in mental health. Wow. There was little bits about positive mental health and environment and all that, but nothing that brought a lot of different things together.
Yeah, so when you were doing your research, what were some of the main challenges that people were experiencing with existing housing?
Well, one of the things that was happening with people was that people were getting stuck living with their parents into middle age and later life, or maybe stuck living in HSE supported accommodation. So that was a big problem with for people. And so other people were having kind of difficulties maybe coping in their own home. And it wasn't like, it's not that everyone with a mental health problem was having this, but it was just a tiny proportion of people. Another problem was that people were misattributing the reasons that people couldn't live on their own or live alone. Like people were saying, oh, it's just because they're lazy or because they're kind of mad or...
That's so terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, rather than going, okay, well, this person has a difficulty planning and organising, or this person has a symptom that makes it harder for them to get going and get started at an activity, but once they're started, they're fine and all that sort of stuff. So that was another problem that people were having. There was a lot of misattribution.
Yeah.
And also there was people like not believing that they could live independently, maybe for reasons of stigma, and all the people themselves sometimes, but also maybe their families or the people who'd be maybe supporting them financially or the services themselves and all that sort of stuff. So they were the kind of main problems that people were experiencing with the housing that they were in at the moment.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it is so interesting, and I've actually never really thought about it before, but it can often be just simple things, even like I was chatting earlier on with producer John, and she was saying even just having like a hook for your key, stuff like that can actually can change somebody's day. Because you don't spend a half an hour trying to find your keys and you stress yourself out, and then it kind of it can be a trigger for maybe even a panic attack or something.
Yeah. So if people are a little bit more stressed and a little bit more vulnerable, these things maybe have more of an impact and maybe make it more difficult. Whereas to every problem there's kind of a solution. So if you can actually think through the different problems that people have and not have it as a big amorphous mass of a problem.
Exactly.
If you can kind of break it down. Break it down. It's kind of simplicity, but it is being really thoughtful about breaking things down and thinking through the difficulties clearly. And there's usually a solution that can be found to a lot of different problems with independent living. That's kind of what we found from doing...
And did you find many solutions?
Oh, there's loads and loads of things that we found. Yeah, like, it's radio, so you can't actually see the book, but it's pages and pages and pages of... What we've done is we've gone through all the different rooms and all the different difficulties, and kind of, it's like a troubleshooting guide. Mm. So we kind of... It was, in one way, a kind of negative thing. We kind of tried to troubleshoot all the possible problems that a person might have and list them and then come up with design solutions. Ah. And obviously design is not the only thing that people need, but design can help in quite a significant way, we kind of believe.
Absolutely.
You know,
and so. Isol, did you discover items or elements of design that could be integrated into shared spaces that we all use every day, like shops and public transport?
Yes, well, I mean, to start with, simply location is really important. Having, you know, looking at where housing is placed, and not just for a person with a mental illness, for all of us, but particularly for a person with a mental illness, having things like having, you know, the local shops, having a chemist, having the hairdresser nearby, partly just to be able to access these because maybe people don't have cars, but also because then people get out and they talk to people and it creates a sense of community. So that's really important. Also, it gets people out walking, and walking is good for you. It's good for all of us. So having things in a place where you, that you can walk to them is really important.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. Then in terms of the actual design of the areas that in which people live, there are things which, again, most of them are good for all of us. Having seating that's well designed and it's in a nice sunny, properly thought out area. It's not just a seat put somewhere because without any thought, but a good seating and where there's a bit of sun and there's a bit of a shade, and well-designed seating is important. Good lighting is really important, particularly as it gets towards dusk. You mm-hmm. want a place to be lit because that gives people a sense of safety. You want places to be a place where maybe you could be a bit quiet if that's what you want, or involved if you don't want to be, but that's always a bit overlooked or a bit supervised. So you don't want places that are isolated, where you can have loitering, and particularly if a person has a bit of a sense of stigma or they stand mm-hmm. out as being slightly different, then they could be bullied. So you want, so these things are good for everyone. They're good, particularly good for older people. They're good for a person with any form of a mental illness. Mm-hmm. They're good for young women with children, with, you know, that they can go and they can sit somewhere and it's nice. And there's, so what's good for a person with a mental illness is good for us all. Maybe sometimes you have to look at it a little bit more carefully, or there's something particular. But yes, there's lots. There's lots in the landscape that we can do, and that we should be doing, to make the places that we live into really good places to live for everyone.
Brilliant. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a minute, but I think we play a tune, girls. We play some music. We will. Here's L King, X's and O's, right here on Whims FM.
and O's, L King, right here on Whims FM, Walk In My Shoes Radio with me, Blana Tracy. Now I'm joined by the two authors of Design for Your Mental Health Report, which looks at some of the issues. Actually, why don't you guys tell us exactly what it looks at?
It looks at how to design spaces that promote independent living for people with complex mental health difficulties, or people who maybe have some disabilities caused by their mental health.
Yes, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, and it is. Actually, one thing just to say, there's three authors. Emer isn't here. Emer Whelan, who also co-authored this.
Okay, so, cool. Yeah. Emer Whelan, fabulous lady.
Absolutely.
Doing some great work. So have you noticed the particular rollout of any of the recommendations made in your report?
Yeah, within the health service, most of my colleagues who'll be talking to in-depth are occupational therapist, so they seem to be using it maybe to troubleshoot individual cases, because that's what happens. Often you get referrals for people maybe who might be struggling a little bit or who want to move out from home.
Yeah.
So people are using them as as a guidance for inspiration. This feedback has been really positive from that quarter.
That's
definitely
brilliant. And people can find this online, isn't that right?
That's right, yes. If you go to the Housing Agency website, which is housingagency.ie, and then if you search for it, you'll find it there.
Brilliant. Now, of course, we're talking about people with particular mental health issues, but is there anything that you guys found in the while you were doing your report that I suppose everybody can use in their day-to-day lives and in their own homes?
Well, as we said before, it's good design is good design for everyone. Mm-hmm. So something that is good and makes you feel well is going to make someone who might have a mental illness feel well as well. And so certain things like the one that comes to mind for everyone is good lighting. Having good daylight coming into where you're living, and having large windows with good views out of it, and proper orientation so that you get the sun when you need it. Mm. That's absolutely the first thing. It's the first thing for all of us. The other things that are having is good outdoor spaces to look at, easily maintained. It's important that, you know, none of us want, well, some people like doing gardening more than others, but
yeah,
certainly having a easily maintained garden that's nicely landscaped. You don't have to have a huge amount of money spent on it, but just easily maintained, nice landscaping that and a good view, that's important. The layout of the house, so that, I suppose, having a place where people can get together and talk and encourage a mixture of good community activity where people can get around a table and talk together, that's important, and also having quiet spaces. So that's those sort of things, the sort of things that make it life good for all of us. So in general, the quality of the environment, both the physical environment and having nice, well-organized spaces, good storage, mm-hmm, having proper storage so that you're, as Sonia said, so that you're not, you know, it's not difficult for you to store items or to find them, because that can be particularly, what we're dealing with is more where things are a bit heightened, a bit more difficult than they would be for everyone, but very much the same sort of things that we all deal with,
yeah,
like getting up and then rushing out in the morning.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah, I mean, I
it's
even
that approach.
Even myself, I'm just thinking there when you're saying that you have a place to put everything and that there's no clutter and that kind of thing. I mean, I
exactly
get really anxious if I come home and there's stuff all over the sitting room, or my room has got clothes thrown all over. It really kind of does stress me out. So it is, like you're saying, it's a good design and kind of being kind of orderly, I suppose, is it?
Yes, because I mean, actually, what good design is, there is delight in good design, and that's that, you hope that's at the heart of it. But what good design is also about really carefully thinking about what people need and making life easy for people.
Exactly.
The other things are making appliances easy to use. I mean, a complicated central heating system doesn't do any of us any good.
No.
So, what can you say? Or a cooker that you can't figure out how to use. These are the sort of things. Some of them are very small things,
yeah,
and some of them are maybe not so small. But most of them are things that we all want in our own home.
Exactly. I mean, if I could have an easy cooker to use, that would be really handy. I still have no idea how to use our cooker.
Yeah,
Charlie does
exactly
all the cooking in our house as well.
Exactly.
And so when you guys were, I suppose, carrying out all of your research, putting this report together, did you decide to change anything in your own homes?
No, but I have a long list. A very long list.
A long list. I want that window a little bit bigger.
Exactly.
Fabulous. Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. And where can people find this report, by the way?
The Housing Agency website, housingagency.ie.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it. You're listening to Whims FM. This is Walk In My Shoes Radio. And we are going to have, I love this guy. This is Hozier, Someone New.
Thank you. every step that I ran to you. Only blue or black days, electing strange perfections in any stranger I choose. Would things be easier if there was a right way?
Got to start talking about mental health. It can get better. Log on to walkinmyshoes.ie to find out more.
With the right support, we can all enjoy life. Taking that first step is possible with St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. If you have concerns about your mental health, talk to your GP or call our support line on 01-249-3333. Don't wait to enjoy life again. St. Patrick's Mental Health Services. Empowering recovery.
We touch, you inspire, you
Kygo Firestone here on WIMS FM. Good evening, everybody. You're tuned into Ireland's only pop-up radio station, Walk In My Shoes Radio, broadcasting live from St. Patrick's Mental Health Services in Dublin 8. I'm Blonna Tracy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. We've got a packed show. Coming up in this hour, we are going to be chatting with one of my favourite people and my favourite jewellery designers, Chupi. She's the sparkliest, loveliest, most creative jewellery designer. And we're going to be speaking with her on the phone in just a little while. But first, I think we should play some more tunes, because who doesn't like tunes? So here we have Years and Years King on WIMS FM.